Welcome to Marooned at MacBytes headquarters, day 44. How is everybody? Oh, I need to refresh. Oh, no, I don't. There's the chat. We've had terrible trouble with the chat, haven't we, Mike?
We have. It's me and the dog were wet.
Oh, yes, the weather's been amazing here today. Just the kind of weather that I adore. It's been raining. This is good for two reasons. One, there are very few people out. Two, very little traffic out.
Three, the grass is growing.
Oh. Oh, dear. Oh, and of course, MacBytes headquarters, it's bin day. And they all went, didn't they?
Why, where's you been? Bum, bum.
Never mind, Mike. Hello, Simon. What are you testing?
One of my teachers said that.
Really?
Yeah, I said, where's the bin? He said, where's you been? I've been nowhere.
That wasn't that one I met before Christmas, was it? Because it sounded like the kind of thing he'd say. The guy with the long hair, I think, or a beard, one or the other, can't remember.
Right.
You know the one I mean. Yeah. Never mind, let's get on. Good evening, Simon.
It was Mr. Gent.
You see, you remember your teachers. To me, they were all just an amorphous blob of idiots.
He taught me woodwork and not very well.
Now, you see, I love woodwork.
Oh, no, he was technical drawing.
I love technical drawing, metalwork and woodwork. But then they put me in the kitchen and it all went south
Mr. Scammell taught me metalwork.
See what I mean? He remembers them
all. Mr. Webb taught me woodwork.
Internet design. See what I did there?
No. Mr. Webb.
Oh, it's been one of those days at MacBytes headquarters. So how the devil are you, Simon?
I'm Simon.
Let us know. I actually think the highlight of the day was 11 o'clock. We were attending an online conference. Now, the conference wasn't supposed to be online, was it, Mike?
No.
No. We'd had this booked for about 18 months, something like that. And it was going to be a day trip for us, which obviously didn't turn into that. Everything had to be online. So it started at 10, which I thought, you know, that's all right for me, because if it was like 8, I wouldn't have been there. But I thought that was actually a little late. I thought maybe 9:30 would be better.
Yeah.
But anyway, it was 10 o'clock. So we're sitting through the first session, looking at each other with increasing incredulity, I thought. And no one had mentioned this minute's silence. And, playing a sniper game and tuning in to MacBytes FM. Can't say fairer than that, Simon. We've been working hard all day, haven't we?
We have.
But during this session at 10 o'clock, I said to Mike, are they doing the minute silence for the NHS workers who've died? Nobody said a word. So Mike boldly went in there, didn't you, Mike?
I did. I'm not shy.
And asked the question. And the people who had been charged with running the virtual rooms hadn't even heard that there was a minute silence. So changes were made at the very last moment. Hello, Alex. Good evening. And we did do the minute silence. But the ones running the thing who were starting the videos at the top of the hour were like, shall I leave it till a minute passed? And we were like, really? Wouldn't you accommodate things like that in hand?
Yeah.
There should have been an event manager looking after that kind of stuff. But the minute silence went very well. We observed it. We watched it on the news, and then we went into our second session of the day. So that was our morning. Did you see the news about Captain Tom, whose birthday is on Thursday? He's only getting a fly past from the Royal Air Force.
Cool.
Oh, that he must be so chuffed with it. He's now over 29 million, you know, because he was at about 26, 27. And then there was an argument with Just Giving on how many were Just Giving. He's also had 125,000 birthday cards, which is amazing. They were all opened by volunteers. That school hall that they're in looks like my old school hall. So the least said about that, the better.
He is 100, isn't he?
He is 100, but he's got 125,000 birthday cards. He's 100 on Thursday. So I'm assuming the Queen's going to send him a card as well. I don't suppose that one's going to be in the hall, is it? Oh, and the other thing was he had a postmark in his honour. Did you see that, Mike?
No.
Oh, that was so cool. Yeah. A birthday postmark. It says, Happy 100th birthday, Captain Thomas Moore, NHS fundraising hero, 30th of April 2020. That is so cool. I'm liking that. I'm liking that.
Rodeo Duos and Jumbo Medium Dog Treats Mega Box 28 Pack.
Yeah.
Do you think she'll like that?
I'm sure she will. She's been overindulging her little self as Lola. Yes. So she's having a rest, an enforced rest from us, an enforced rest she needs. So that's what she's doing today. He's now over 25 million. I see what you mean, Simon. Hey, long may he reign. Long may he reign.
How do you spell schmackos?
Schmackos?
There it is. I'll just
have SM. I think it starts. Oh, no, it's SHM, isn't it? Schmacko. See the intellectual questions we have here on Mark Pats FM.
I'm just going to search for dog treats this evening.
Yeah, just search Lola. She's probably put them on your favourites. Silly, silly boy. So, what have you been up to, Simon? What have you been doing? Let us know. Did you send the mail, Mike?
Yeah.
Well, I know Jonathan's on his way.
I did indeed.
So we'll cross-question Jonathan when he arrives.
I got the mail.
No. Am I on? Oh, I would have got the mail, wouldn't I? Let me have a look. I'd done a stupid thing before. I'd archived a mail and then realised that I wanted to read it. And then by the time I got back to the archive where they all live, because I don't delete it, I just archive it, I'd totally forgotten which mail it was. I think I'm getting to the stage of losing the plot, shall we say.
Johnny's here.
Hey, Johnny. Hello.
Johnny's probably been cooking.
Do you reckon?
Yeah.
Oh, Jonathan did get the mail.
I saw yesterday's dinner that Johnny posted because I wasn't in yesterday.
So Simon says he's not been furloughed. Still at the day job. Can you work from home though, Simon? That's the question. Hasn't the weather been abysmal in Manchester today, Jonathan? Oh, a big day. A hell of a day in a good way or a hell of a day in a bad way. It's been a very wet day, which has been good news for me. As I was saying earlier, excellent news because it's been quiet. Not so many idiots out when it's raining. So all we needed in April, really, was to have the usual Manchester weather and everything would have been fine.
Fried egg sandwich. When I was a student...
Go on.
Which was a long time ago. When I was a student and I lived in Leeds up near Johnny in Moortown, some family friend bought me a sandwich maker. You know, one of those things you can get in Argos.
Yes.
And it gave you in the instructions, you know, ideas. One of the ideas was that you slapped an egg in the middle of the two pieces of bread, slammed the thing shut, and then you got a fried egg sandwich.
And did you?
Yeah.
Or did you not try?
No, I did try. It obviously makes a bit of a mess.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Mm.
They still make those toasted sandwich.
Oh, yeah, but you'd need bigger bread than the gluten-free bread, which is quite tiny, to be honest.
Toasted sandwich maker, yeah.
He didn't want to go for his walk, didn't Jonathan? No, Lola felt pretty much the same, Jonathan. But Mike didn't put her in anything silly, in any silly clothes. So she's come back reasonably wet and is now settled down. She wandered in for a treat, but she wasn't allowed any because she'd had an upset tummy. So she just eyeballed me. But to be honest, I haven't even finished my salad yet because I didn't feel too well either. Do you know, it's probably sitting here concentrating all day that did it.
Yeah.
If you missed the beginning, Jonathan, we've been at a conference all day. We'd booked for a conference over 12 months ago and we were going to go to it. Obviously, it got cancelled. But Mike, I remember you pinging them and sort of saying, is this going online? It was like, no, no, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
It was like, really? Really? This was about 5 weeks ago. And we were thinking, no, it's not. Anyway, once the lockdown came about, it all had to go online. So we've been attending since 10 o'clock this morning. Would you say with varying degrees of success?
Yeah.
Yeah. They used Facebook as the platform for delivering it. And the best advice was, at the top of the hour when the next session's on, just refresh Facebook and then just keep looking till you find the track you're on. Which I said to Mike, Facebook's not optimised in any way, shape or form for hosting a conference. We did manage to find every session that we wanted, but you found a couple of them way before I did. Because it's random, isn't it? The algorithm that Facebook uses, what it actually shows you in a group, is random. So it can take you quite a while to find it. So, our day, I would say, has been pretty much like Jonathan's. Not that bad, just busy. So we attended every one of the sessions that we were going to. We even managed to pull in an extra one, didn't we? That we didn't attend on demand.
Yeah.
So we've got, I think it's 7 minutes left on that one. But it got us thinking about how you learn stuff. Obviously, we're teaching professionals, but how do you prefer to learn? Pretty much every one of these, I would say it was like video-based with slides, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So do you prefer video? Do you prefer books? What about you, Mike? What happens when you're learning something new? What do you prefer?
I prefer video. Along with some examples, usually off a web page.
Maybe,
what about you?
Maybe it's slightly different for me because your stuff is something that's specific. It's a new function in Excel. So when I say specific, I mean like there's a way it's going to work. And if you don't get the syntax correct, it's not going to work. So you have to be incredibly precise. A lot of the things that I do are more artistic. So if you think about learning a technique in Affinity Photo, you've got to play around a lot. Now, it wouldn't help you to play around with a function, would it? At all. You can't play around with it. Well, what happens if I put X in there? Well, you know, there's a new function and it's called Fred. Well, what if I call it Frida? No, it doesn't work then, does it? There's no artistic license.
No, you can't play around with it from that point of view.
No, that's what I mean. So, but a lot of what I do, I remember when I was preparing for a course, creating a course. Good morning, Paul. Good morning.
I felt that somebody was reading. I'm just seeing what Jonathan's put. Somebody was reading the PowerPoint slides. That first woman.
Oh, she definitely was. Yeah. This, what was so funny with this was, we sat through the keynote, massive air quotes. I had no idea who this woman was, and I think if you're doing a keynote, you've got to be something special. Otherwise, why are you a keynote? And the other speakers are just speakers, and I found it dry, prescriptive, didn't take into account the audience, just not memorable at all. What was the most comical was, at the end of the day, we'd done the first one, the second one, an extra one at lunch, then the third one, and then I think another two or possibly three. So we've attended between 6 to 7 sessions. Mike mentioned this, the keynote, and I said, go on, remind me. And I'd completely forgotten the content of it, what the topic was, and who presented it.
Yes, it was that memorable, wasn't it?
Exactly. So Mike reminded me, and I went, oh, her. Yeah, right. And like you say, Jonathan, the slides didn't have too much text on, but every word she said had come from the slides. By comparison, then there was another one, wasn't there, that we saw before, the decent one. This is the one we've got on video when we were kind of working through. He started and he put a slide up. And I said to Mike, no, just no. And the thing was, what he'd done, the first slide was incredibly busy. It had like clip art on it. But the background of it was bright blue, bright royal blue. Now, I just don't think that ever works well on a slide. I think you can get away with a pale blue and you can get away with a navy blue, a very dark blue, but not royal blue. I think it's too garish on the eyes. And the one between him and the first session in the morning, what was her audio like?
Not good.
She started off and it was fine. And then she cut to a pre-recorded piece. Good evening, Tracy. And it was shocking. It was appalling. It was far too loud. Now, when I say loud, obviously you can turn it down. But the thing was, at the point of recording, it had peaked. So if you were to look at the waveform, it would have been a completely solid block. After 5 minutes, my ears were bleeding. I couldn't handle it. I said to Mike, you know, this is just... And once it's peaked, there's nothing you can do with it. You can lower the volume, but what was missing was the cadence between the phrases. Everything was all at deafening pitch. It was awful. So the audio put me off that one. I can't tell you a word she said either because of the audio. But the fascinating one was just after lunch, wasn't it? No, he was later, wasn't he? He was much later because you went out with the dog. He must have been the 4 o'clock slot. The other thing that they did, so Jonathan said he doesn't like them reading the PowerPoints. This was the one that got me. They all started off, and it started at the top of the hour. And I can tell by the time I look at the clock, which is basically when I've had enough of the intro, I think the first one didn't do much of an intro from memory, but probably more than I would have wanted. And I noticed like 7 minutes passed, one of them was still banging on about who they were and why you should listen to them. And another one went on for 9 minutes. So Mike had missed the beginning of that one. He wandered in and said, which one's this? So I told him and I said, but it's all right. You know, she spent 9 minutes telling us about her childhood. And he went, what? And I said, no, seriously. I said, she went to this school and then she went to another school. And I could tell him her life story, but I don't want that when a conference only has like 45 to 50 minutes. What was the most interesting thing about that was there was one session where, now one of the speakers we'd seen before, the blue one in the middle. So he didn't need an intro. All of the others had done an intro. So he sits down to the 4 o'clock slot. And this was another keynote. Can't understand why there's half a dozen keynotes, but never mind. So he sits down to this one. They said his name.
I think if you're well known, then you're a keynote.
Oh, right. Well, I'd never heard of him. So he got going. He said his name, went straight into it. And I think it was the only session all day that Mike and I actually stopped and we didn't do anything else, did we?
No.
The thing was, at the end of it, I said to Mike, OK, I know his name, but I don't know what his business is. I don't know what he does. I don't know what products he sells because he didn't waste time telling us. So Mike said, but that's not necessarily a good thing if he's, from his perspective, that he's delivered a very good session, but you don't know what his business is and what his product is, and therefore you wouldn't be inclined to buy it. And I said, no, you're totally wrong. I said, he was the only one all day that I will go away and make it my business to find out what his business is and what he's selling, because I appreciated the fact he didn't assault me and my ears for 10 minutes telling me who he was and what he sold. Plus the fact I think he did the best session of the day by far.
He did, by far. Definitely.
Yeah, so that's learning by video. So you prefer video and playing around with
playing
it.
Playing around, yeah.
I always feel I take longer than Mike to learn something new because the stuff that I'm doing isn't as precise as Mike's stuff. So something like I was prepping for a course and I needed to show how to select a dog and all its fur. Bunny, the dog. And I can't just do that once. I mean, I know how to make a selection, but I can't just do it once in rehearsals. Hello, Paul. Eat your sandwich, Jonathan, and enjoy it. I have to go through and do that demonstration in rehearsals at least 10 to 12 times. And the reason is not because I don't know what I'm doing, but the fact that I do know what I'm doing, I need to make sure when I do it for real, when I'm also walking and talking at the same time, I'm voicing it as I'm making a selection. I need to know on average how long it will take to make that selection. And sometimes the difference can be something like, seriously, 8 to 10 minutes difference. Now that sounds excessive, but it's not. When I did that demonstration last Friday on After Hours, I did the, excuse me while I have a glass of water. I made that selection of the scrubs and I actually only did it once before the demonstration. But that was because as I'd started doing it, it took ages. And I thought, oh, this, you know, I've got to be thinking. It's not a good demonstration for you to sit and watch me make a selection for 10 minutes. And I thought, well, I need to make a selection. And if that's how long it takes, that's how long it takes. I wanted it to be fairly accurate around the edges, but I wasn't going crazy, you know, over the hairs on his arms and stuff. When I actually came to do it live, that was the second time I'd made that selection. And it took seconds. I said when we'd finished, I said to Mike, did you notice that selection just boom? And there it was. Now, Affinity Publisher Designer and Photo do have built-in artificial intelligence. And I seriously wondered if it made a better selection, a faster selection the second time, because I'd already done it once, the painstaking way. Does it learn as it goes? Because it literally, the difference was like 10 minutes. Which is unheard of usually. But I have to make that selection at least 10 to 12 times before I go in, because I need to have at least a ballpark idea of how long it will take, because I need to have enough to say while I'm making the selection. But if I clicked once and it just selected it, then I might have to stop while I gave important information. And I think with Mike, you know, if you've got a function and you put numbers in it, as long as you put the right numbers in the right place, it will always add up. You don't need to check it 12 times.
True.
But I think with mine, I do. If I'm learning new features, videos are helpful. But sometimes there are no videos because the feature's just that new. One thing I do is just, I read the release notes, which we always have the laugh that you don't.
I once did.
Did you see that? Once read the release notes. The other 3,000 times didn't read the release notes. But sometimes release notes can actually give you some very useful information. The other place to visit, if it's a brand new feature, is obviously the help file. It's amazing how many apps roll out updates with new features, but they don't update the help file to let you know. One thing that Adobe did right... Make a note of the date. I'm about to say Adobe did something right. They have different interfaces that you can apply. So you can apply like a specific workspace. And one of the workspaces they have is new features. And what that does is actually highlight in the menu and the commands all of the new features so you can work through them. Obviously, if you've no idea, if the feature is like copy and paste, then you know what it's going to do. But if it's something and you've no idea what it is and the name doesn't really help and you've got no help file, then that's very difficult. But sometimes I do just do that and just play around with it, just see how it actually works, which, like I've just said to you, I don't think that works with Excel. You need to know what parameters to pass it.
True.
Or it doesn't work.
I've got a question about learning.
Go on.
Hi, Deb. CQ.
CQ, Deb, CQ. Hello, Kim.
When you attend a training course or a conference or an after hours, any kind of learning event, do you make notes?
During the event.
Now, if you know that the thing is being recorded, do you still make notes or do you rely on the fact that you're going to be sent a handout or the recording's going to be made available?
First thing I'll say about that is I notice when you're training, you always say there'll be a handout. You don't need to sit and make copious notes.
I was going to mention that myself. That possibly comes from a discussion I had with one of the guys at the Catenians. Because he was an ex-school teacher, and he used to say, don't make notes, there'll be handouts available, I want you to concentrate on me. And I, yeah.
Egotistical.
Yeah, as the Kim's saying, for some reason the player is not loading.
I'm assuming she means can't hear us all.
Yeah, do a refresh.
Don't we have a feed? A link that we could give Kim as a backup. You know, the one for the built-in player thing?
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. I'll leave you with that.
You mean the direct thing?
The direct thing, that's
yeah,
what I mean.
I'll go and find it in a minute. Paul's saying no for him. Yeah, I've lost my thread now. Yeah, at the beginning of my training courses, like you say, I'll say to people, if you want to make notes, by all means feel free, because that is how some people learn. You know, they'll make notes and that's their memory jogger. But I think other than, you know, if you're busy making notes, then you're not focusing necessarily on what's being said. And certainly in a training, you know, a software training environment, a lot of people like to try things out as they go.
I must admit,
I'll try and find that link whilst you're
talking. I am an inveterate note taker. I need to be occupied while I'm watching. Always have done. What I'll say about you and your notes, which is slightly different, I used to attend a lot of Microsoft, physical Microsoft events locally. They would come round about once a quarter, maybe once every 4 months. And you would walk in and on your seat, there would be an enormous stack of A4 pieces of paper with a heavy duty stapler in the corner. And they would have on them the slides, and next to the slides, there'd be space to write. Now, what you're saying to people is the notes will be available at the end. The difference with that was the notes were there at the beginning, or at least copies of the slides were, and, you know, the space for you to make your own notes.
This link here.
That's the one.
Yeah.
Right. We're putting in a backup link for Kim. There will be, you'd need to open it in a separate window because you won't see the chat. That's our backup link. You better explain, because she can't hear us, Mike. She's going to wonder what you've put that in for. For Kim, emergency access. So I can look at the slide on the screen. I can look at the slide in the paper. And then if there's anything that I want to make a note of, then I can. What I don't have to do is actually write down the content of the slides. But, you know, if you could see some of those from years ago, they were absolutely covered in my scrolls. What I was capturing wasn't necessarily exactly what they were saying verbatim. It was just ideas that came to me at the time. And, you know, in an average presentation, they could get through sort of 60 to 70 slides. What I'd be fascinated with from your perspective, Mike, is wouldn't they be better having those notes from the get-go? Yeah. Or are you concerned they'd be reading them?
No, they would be better having them from the get-go. And I often, for some reason, I've just never done it, but I have sort of thought about sending links out to people before the course starts. What I do is I send them a link so that they can download the demo files so that they can play and practice whilst I'm training. So, you know, if they've got my Skype screen on one monitor and a copy of Excel on the other. Now, I know at the moment a lot of people can't do that because they're working from home and they've only got a single monitor. But if they can do that, then it means they can. It's like a classroom situation where they can be watching what I'm doing on one screen and actually playing on the other screen. But yeah, I think it would be good to give them those handouts prior to the training.
Now, that brings into play what Paul says, which is, I've been told you should not hand out anything for them to read, as your audience will be reading the handouts and not listening or watching.
That is true. That is the flip
that,
side,
that is
I guess.
A point, and that's why I assume you left it till the end. But what I'd say about that is, Paul, I agree with you, but it brings into play a whole different thing, which is... pair note. Good grief. I remember you mentioning that. This was the best bit of software. I remember you mentioning that when you were at uni, Jonathan.
I remember him mentioning pair notes.
Yes, pair notes. Is it still going? It is, isn't it? It is, yeah. I'll actually come on to that as well because I've seen a bit about that. No, can't say I disagree with Paul, because I think when I've given notes out, that's exactly what happens. And you know that you've lost them. But I don't see much point in hanging on to them till the end either, because then they are going to be sitting, in my opinion, they will be sitting there making notes because they don't know what notes they're going to be getting at the end. So one thing to think about is your training, Mike, is the first time that they have seen whatever it is that you're training them.
Yeah.
The giving out of notes beforehand, and maybe even a video, brings into play a flipped classroom.
Yeah.
So who's heard of a flipped classroom?
Unfortunately, we don't have time for all these niceties.
You've no time to do it right, you mean?
You know, one of the things I've been thinking about for like 3 years is, you know what we call bidder note training?
Oh, yes, bidder note training.
If you go back in history, a typical training course that we used to run would be like 1 or 2 days. They'd turn up at 9 o'clock, 9:30, and they'd leave at 4, 4:30. And there'd be a full day. Yes, there'd be a couple of breaks and there'd be lunch, but it would be like 2 full days. Or in my case, I used to run 5-day courses for VBA. I shouldn't really mention the other 5-day course, could I? Should I?
What?
Because somebody might get overexcited.
Oh, the access course.
The access course, yes.
Five day access course.
Yeah, so as time has gone on, that's kind of fallen out of fashion, to the point where most of the courses that I run now are an hour or an hour and a half. I do run some 2-hour courses. Those are Nucleus courses. And it's fallen out of fashion for a few reasons. I think one is the sort of advent of modular training through YouTube and through things like Udemy and stuff like that, where it's chunked down, but also the business. We like saying the business.
Oh, the business.
In double quotes.
No one actually knows. I mean, how do you know what the business wants? Does the business sit and tell you? I've got this vision in my head of the business being like Davros in Doctor Who. They keep it in a locked room somewhere. We'll go and ask the Oracle that is the business.
The business don't really want people out on 5-day courses unless it's something business critical. And our stuff isn't business critical. So we've modularized it down like that, but I mean, we discuss regularly, don't we? Like 5-minute training courses.
Well, Michael coming in and he'll say, "Oh, I've got this course to do," and then like a good few years ago, what, 4 or 5 years ago, it would be, yeah, it's a 1 day, and I'd say that used to be a 3. I know, but I've had to get it into 1. Okay, it's just got silly.
It has. So most of our courses now, let's take a typical Excel course that I do. It will be an hour. Pivot tables. It will be an hour. What I've thought about doing is making it an hour and 15 and giving them some exercises.
Well, that was the difference. If it was a 5-day face-to-face thing, and I did many of those Microsoft ones, so you had an arch lever binder. You literally had 4 inches worth of paper to get through. And you did it over the course of 5 days. I don't see how you can do that in an hour and a half myself.
No.
The worst thing is when they expect that you can exchange. Let's take something not quite as advanced as that, or a 5-day access course, because Paul said he doesn't think he'd survive it. And Kim says she hopes Deb doesn't fall off the chair because you mentioned it. But, you know,
I wondered how I'd survive it when I used to deliver it.
Something like a 3-day PowerPoint course.
Yeah.
Now, do you think 3 days for a PowerPoint course is excessive? There's probably about 6 hours training in a day. So let's ask the gang. Oh, the 4-inch binder courses. They were horrible, weren't they? They went on. We tried to finish them by lunchtime on the Friday and then go out to Chinatown, which was close to the training centre, for a lovely lunch and then head off home early.
I used to did you ever deliver any of those 5-day things? Or did you just sit them for the exams?
I sat a few for the exams, and I did maybe 2 or 3 that were longer.
I used to deliver a front page course. Did somebody mention front page in here the other night, didn't they? Yeah. The big ring binder, lever arch front page course.
Does anybody think that 18 hours for PowerPoint is overkill? Do you think you could learn the whole of PowerPoint much less than that? You have a funny story about that.
You know which one I'm thinking about.
I know exactly which one you're thinking about. No, you tell it. It's your story, babe.
I worked for a very small training company many, many years ago, and I delivered a 1-day PowerPoint course. Now, actually, going back to your question, I think you I think there's actually enough content in PowerPoint now. If you padded it out with exercises and you padded it out with some presentation skills, maybe to actually do a 3-day course, you probably wouldn't struggle to fill 3 days. But going back to 1996, I think it was, I was working for this really small training company. And the one sales guy said to me, "Oh, are you only doing a 1-day PowerPoint course? Because do you not know it well enough to have more content?"
People treated trainers as though, not as though they were stupid, but like a commodity. That they could be as rude as they like to you. But actually, I'm the one with the talent. I faced a similar thing.
Yeah.
But not in relation to whether you knew enough to fill 2 days.
No, you had the sexist comments.
Oh, I had lots of sexist comments. I remember walking into one training session. It was a 5-day Outlook power, basically VBA building thing. It was a development course. And I wandered into the... There's a waiting room when you do face-to-face training. So there was two guys in there and they were youngish. So they were probably a little bit younger than me, maybe about 5 years younger than me. So I wandered in and said, "You know, have you got your coffee and everything?" Which I loathe being in that room because I can't abide the smell of coffee. So it was, "Oh, yes, yes, thank you very much." You know, fine. So I then wandered back into the training room and I was setting everything up. Then I went back to the coffee room and I said, "Do you want to come through to the training room?" "Oh, yes, yes." Well, thing was, it took him quite a while because one of them had broke his leg skiing. So he was in a plaster cast up to his waist. So we finally got him in and get some sat down. And they just sat there. And they were clearly like waiting for somebody. So I thought, well, I was only aware there was two people on the course. So I thought, who are we waiting for? Turned out they thought I was like the secretary and they were waiting for the trainer. They were waiting for the big man to come in. So when I said, "Well, shall we get going then?" It was like, "Yeah, well, we're waiting for the trainer." And I said, "I'm here." The look of sheer blind disappointment on their face was palpable. So I thought, oh, this is going to be a good week, isn't it? Right. I said, "Right, well, do you want to introduce yourselves?" And for the first...
They'd rather have had a big bloke than a dolly bird.
Yeah. I'm not a dolly bird, am I? No, I think they were probably thinking it was a jolly away from the office and it'd be all boys together. I mean, that wasn't the first time I'd had training like that. But, you know, they did the introduction and I think you get about an hour 45, don't you? And then you take a break.
Yeah.
By the time we got to the first break, I was thinking that they'd be saying to the training company, "Right, you know what, we've had enough." All of a sudden, I was one of the boys. "Oh, yes, loving this. So, you know, they came around in the end. And that was a long one. Now, I think with PowerPoint, how many PowerPoint slides would be in an 18-hour PowerPoint course? I think the trick with that is, Paul, not that many at all. Now, Jonathan says it's a lot to do with giving presentations well and it's practice. Some is skill in terms of preparing the slides, but a lot is practice and technique, something you can't really teach. I think you can teach it to some degree, Jonathan. I think for some people, it's just it's not something they have been taught. By comparison to when we were at school, there was no computers, much less PowerPoint. Kids are now being taught PowerPoint, but unfortunately, they're being taught by teachers who are in their sort of late 30s, 40s, 50s, who haven't got a clue. So they can use PowerPoint, but they're not great at building slides and then presenting it. I think 3 days for PowerPoint is not excessive, but it really depends where your starting point is. But I don't think a course should necessarily be judged on the length either. But unfortunately, what's happened is, you know, the 3-day PowerPoint course has turned into, "Can you do that?" Well, they'll say to you, "Can you do that in 2 hours?"
Yeah.
And before you know it, it's, "Oh, that'll have to be 90 minutes. Well, I think we need to get that in under an hour." You cannot do a 3-day PowerPoint course in an hour.
No.
You are going to have to leave bits out, lots of it. So Deb says she'd been to some 5-day courses in the sewing arena. Didn't learn a lot. It was too much and lots of noise and distractions. I think one of the issues, which... Oh, somebody's mentioned. Hang on, let me go back up a bit. Kim says, I can only take so much in a day. So the progression of the way that I did it with Notion, where learn a bit, go and do it, come back, worked. And I agree with that, Kim. That's where the three-day courses can be quite intense. But Mike and I have been on courses, haven't we? Not even courses, like conferences. And at the end of the day, we haven't actually delivered anything. We're exhausted because we were in the moment and we were pushing ourselves to learn. And people don't seem to want to do that now. They just seem to want to have. And then, you know, this hour long PowerPoint course you're doing, they'll want it in 30 minutes next. So many years ago in the UK, there was a TV program, and part of it, they did a little bit of a quiz inside the program, and it was called Bid a Note. So I don't know if there was anything similar in America. But basically, you bid a note, something like from 10 notes or whatever. And you took it down. They gave you a clue as to what a song was. And then you said, I'll name that in X number of notes. And it was bid a note. And of course, the idea was the more songs, the fewer notes you needed to guess a song, the more songs you could guess and the more money you would win. So they'll say, like, I'll name it in 4. Well, I'll name it in 3. I wish I could remember what that program actually was. I've got an idea. It was Bob Monkhouse.
Name that tune.
Name that tune. Tom O'Connor.
Name that tune was originally American, according to Wikipedia.
Oh, well, it was originally part of another program, and then it got like boosted to a program of its own. But in training now, it's how fast it can be delivered. In how many minutes can you get that training out of the door? Oh, WordStar, my word. I remember WordStar.
I've got a question.
Go on.
Okay, and be truthful.
Me?
No,
oh, dear.
No.
Oh, well, that's okay then.
Our MacBiters. I'm sure I know the answer because they're conscientious students. If we were to give you an exercise to do, be it an Excel spreadsheet or something in Notion or something in Affinity, and we were to, I don't know, post the files on links to the files on YouTube so you could download them, and then we were to sit back for 10-15 minutes and let you, you know, have a practice, because I know you've all been busy, like Kim's set up a Notion thing, and I know a lot of you have done the MacBites posters on your own. Would you actually do it there and then?
In real time.
In real time.
In real time.
Because the reason I'm asking is, I started talking, didn't I, about adding 15 minutes onto the course for exercises. And I would be wondering whether people at work would bother doing it.
Or I don't think they would. I think they'd be on their phone.
They'd be on the phone. They'd be checking their email. Yep. They'd be on another Skype call to somebody else. They'd be going to have a brew. I was just interested to know what people...
Well, I'm reading the bit that Kim's put about, well, I think about that. I get that at dental conventions all the time. They ask for the doctor. I have to say I am the doctor. The number of times that happened. One of the classics, you'll remember, Mike, it was that place up Wilmslow Way. Huge company. Do you remember it just past the phone box?
Yeah.
What's the company? It's an insurance company, isn't it?
Royal
London. It's an insurance company. And I was there training Visio for their workflow. So I walked into this room, and it was a very tiny room. It was the only room they got available for the training. And they wanted to squeeze 12 people on the course. And I'm like, no, there aren't 12 seats, so we're not having 12 on the course. I think we ended up with about 10. They were all blokes, and they thought they were there for a playtime. Oh, it's a woman. It's a woman. And they were all talking amongst themselves. And, you know, like when you start training and they're with you, and then all of a sudden you get one talking to another and then another one talking to somebody else. And before you know it, no one's listening to you.
Mm.
And you're on somebody else's premises. What can you do? What should you do? I mean, have you ever had that where they are literally just ignoring you?
Probably.
It's only happened to me twice. Once was this Visio course and once was a project course. And the project course wasn't that they weren't listening to me. They started arguing amongst themselves about how they were going to do it. And you do need to own the room.
That's why my examples tend to be generic and not too specific, because then they start arguing, like you say.
Well, we weren't using their data. We were using generic data, but they just started arguing amongst themselves. That lot were from the police. they were either retired police or they were civilian support workers, and they just started arguing amongst themselves. That time, I just banged the desk and said, "Excuse me, I'm training. You will be quiet." And they did, to be fair to them. The other lot, the guys, this I just shut up. I just sat there on the desk at the front of it.
So you were Miss Giles, the heavy-handed teacher.
I was that day, yeah. Well, it's rude.
It is rude.
I just picked up a book and thumped the desk with it. Exactly. But the other one, I just shut up. I just sat there.
I've done that.
And it's taken them like a good 30 seconds to realise that the woman's not speaking no more. And it was like, whoa, just a minute, she shut up. I said, have you quite finished?
I've done that at cleaning meetings.
No, literally, this room of blokes, I said, have you quite finished? And they just looked at me as though, well, you know, carry on. I said, I'm a professional trainer, not a kindergarten teacher. So have you finished? Yes, sorry. you shouldn't have to do that, should you? You certainly shouldn't. Hello, Anthony. Probably not. It's a convenient time to be antisocial.
It looks like most of them wouldn't bother. So I'll tell you.
I love Jonathan's. Depends what time it is. Oh, I'm getting plans right here.
There we go. That I won't take that idea any further with after hours.
Now, hang on. Kim says we had to give slide presentations twice a week in residency, and it made us used to giving them and preparing the slides. I actually saw a video, Kim, and this is something else I was going to mention. And he's a medical student. And he's a medical student in London. He's at King's. And as part of their... And he's going into his clinical year, which is halfway through... Year three, I think he is, just into the end of year three. And they've just been told they have to do a presentation. And the first presentation isn't actually anything clinical at all. It's just a practical skill thing. Now, you did that with that guy that videoed it.
Which one?
Oh, the good one. Basically, it was a train the trainer course, and you had to do a presentation that wasn't something like software or something like that. It was a very practical thing. Something physical that you could demonstrate with your hands.
Yeah.
So how you should demonstrate with your hands. Guess what Mike picked?
See you, Johnny.
Night, Jonathan.
Most of them won't understand.
What, because it's...
Because it's cricket. It was how to put your protective gear on when playing a game of cricket.
Yes, and I've seen the video of it. Definitely need to put that onto a DVD.
Have I improved?
Oh, you were good back then. You were good back then. But that's the kind of thing. It is very useful to actually do that. And he said at the end of it, you know, he'd been sat there, he'd done another degree, so he was 6 years into degree level education. And it was the first time he'd actually tried to prepare anything. And the next one they had to do was a clinical presentation to get their skills up so they could teach people. I agree with Paul here, where he says everyone just wants the quick fix shortcuts from the training. That's fine as long as you think about it. And yes, it was Name That Tune. You were spot on there, Paul.
My very first job when I was 21 was working for Bupa. Anyone in the UK will have heard of Bupa. They're probably the largest private medical insurance company. It was a clerical job. I was basically not inputting claims, but claims will be input into a computer system. They go through processing overnight, and any that didn't match a certain criteria that was programmed into the system, which... brings me back to DataEase and Anthony, because I remember building something in DataEase with validation of stuff. But anything that didn't match any of the validation criteria would be rejected and go into a suspended status.
Joe, that's exactly what my mum used to do. She was a suspensions clerk when she's very first started.
Well, this job was called a suspended claims analyst.
There you go.
Yeah. Actually, it was a suspension clerk, and we bigged it up and called it suspended claims analyst. Anyway, that wasn't the point of the story. The point of the story was, for the first 6 weeks, we attended a training course. I mean, I do an induction to new people of an hour. There you go, bin and out training.
There you go.
I was doing one yesterday. But this was getting people familiar with the new system. So Bupa had just put in a new system. They'd automated everything, hence the fact they needed inputting people and people like myself to deal with the suspended claims. And we spent 6 weeks learning how this system worked. And when we actually got on the job and did it for real, we needed to know literally a fraction of that.
That's what somebody else said about training, that you need just-in-time training.
Yeah.
Mike and I have been in training that long, though, that these fads come in and then they disappear again. And to me, if something's valid, it's valid. And it's not time-based in terms of, well, it used to work in 1972 and it doesn't work now. I mean, if you read a book, you'll learn something if you want to. And that's the same today as it's always been. But these initiatives came in, like just-in-time training in the flipped classroom. And if they've got value, great. If they haven't, then no. But if they're the latest thing that everybody's talking about, then that's what people want. I'm reading it through here as well. Yes, you would. No, you wouldn't. You'd want to do it later. I must admit, I'm one of the ones who are like, I want to think about it and I'd like to do it later. And Anthony does one-on-one with his students, so they do have a choice. Loving that.
I didn't realise that Bupa was now worldwide.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah.
Some courses, if the examples are relatable to the business, but some of them have no relatable to how we're going to use them in the software. That, I guess, depends. I mean, when you first started training, Mike, all your courses were public. So you weren't tailoring it to individuals at all. It was just booked. And that's that. So Deb says her own classes were hands-on. They had to work through the sections before they could go to the next step, which is a good way to work. That takes us onto the flipped classroom, doesn't it? I always think with you, if I was on one of your courses, I'd be thinking I need to see those notes to know whether I need to make any notes. The other thing that you do is someone will, 9 times out of 10 on every course Mike will do, and I would also say 9 times out of 10 before you even start, say to you, is this session being recorded?
Yeah.
I don't know if they want it for reference or if they think, well, I'm here and I'll half pay attention and then I'll check it out later.
I think it's a bit of both. I think most people do want to go back and rewatch. And Johnny said that in the chat about after hours earlier. But for some reason, the other trainers in the team don't like the courses being recorded. Now, there are, from a legal point of view, you are supposed to say, we are recording this. Now, if people do say that when we're having a normal meeting, and I have no problem saying I'm recording this. And if people arrive on time and you've said it, then that's fine.
I think if you think about the way Zoom works, there's a recording button and you can see it.
Yeah.
So if somebody comes late, that is their notice that it's been recorded.
Yeah.
But when you say to them, this one hasn't been recorded, but I've got another one that was, I actually think most people would be like, oh, they want the one they were at recording. And that's why I think every training thing should be recorded.
When I've delivered nucleus for the 20,000th time,
Well, you'd run out of disk space, obviously, for all that nucleus training. But Kim's just asking what a flipped classroom is. A flipped classroom is where you do where you get your students to do the work up front. So if you think of like an after hours, we don't flip after hours. A flipped after hours would be where I get in touch with all you guys on Wednesday and say, this is what's going to happen on Friday. Watch this video, work through this example, and then come to after hours. At that point, what should have happened is you should have done the preparation work. And when you come to after hours, you're in the zone to ask questions. Well, this didn't work for me. I didn't expect that to happen. And the idea of the flipped classroom is that it's more productive. The alternative is the standard classroom where you come along, you have I would say you had no idea what's going to be demonstrated, because in a flipped classroom, it could be maths, physics, English. So you have an idea. So when I was at university, we had what was called a detailed study guide. And we had one, two, three pages that told you everything that was going to be in the lecture. But how many people could get ahead and have all of that prepped before the lecture? So many people turned up at the lecture and they took the lecture as being the first time they'd heard the details of a case or the principle that was being discussed. And they used the detailed study guide afterwards to review what they had learned. But a flipped classroom puts the learning first. If you think of it as a standard way, so you go in to a lecture and you learn about, let's say, the rule against hearsay in evidence, and it's the first time you've heard of it, and you're sat there and the lecturer's speaking and you're trying to make notes, you would be confused. You would be confused because as you're taking the notes and you're missing the next bit. I mean, I don't know about you, but half the time when I was taking notes, I'd leave a gap because I knew I'd missed a bit and I'd have to go back and find out what that was. The idea with the flipped classroom is that you've got the structure of what you're being expected to learn in your head first. It can work well, but I think it depends how well the face-to-face or the actual learning bit following you getting up to speed on a video and maybe reading something, how well that is conducted. For a lot of lecturers, they don't quite get the flipped classroom and they end up just doing the lecture and you're then bored because you've already worked through that. But yeah, a flipped classroom puts the learning first. So you are, instead of being given homework, you basically do the homework first. Or the bit you do first is actually the bit that would be done in class. And then in class, in inverted commas, you discuss it and think it through and ask questions about it. It can be very, very useful if it's done well. So Paul says he's been to a couple of webinars where you were watching a recorded session and the comments were live. Didn't particularly like it as it wasn't made known that it was pre-record. That's the thing with a pre-record. I mean, we do on occasion do a YouTube premiere, as you know, but you are aware that it's recorded and I am in the chat.
Most of those things today were pre-recs.
They were.
Yeah.
Which, given what they were, I wouldn't have expected them to take questions live anyway, but they weren't in a position to if it was a pre-record. It's handy sometimes to be in the chat, but if you think about how After Hours works, we only ever do a pre-record if we can't do a Saturday, nor can we do a Friday. If we can do a Friday or a Saturday, then we will do it. It wouldn't be a case if we can't do Friday, so we'll pre-record it. So a pre-record is literally only when we can't do a Friday or a Saturday. But I'm aware, so Mike might say to me, do you know what, I might fancy a Friday off. But I don't think After Hours works or would work as well. I'm always very, very mindful of the topics that we cover when it's a pre-record, because lots of times you guys ask questions and I want to answer them straight away.
Which is exactly what Anthony's just saying.
And you can't do that in the chat. Sometimes the speaker is in the chat and answers the questions in the chat, but it does feel a little bit odd. I agree with you. It does feel odd. Yeah, that's usually how they do it, Paul. They'll pay to have a recording. Well, they'll pay for somebody to deliver a live session and then they'll make a recording of it. And sometimes they actually ask, well, you've done that, haven't you? They'll ask you to turn up for the chat.
Yeah.
Which I must admit I did find very weird.
Yeah, I did that last year, I think it was. I did an Excel VBA session for a company and they recorded it and then they said to me, we're going to put this out as a recorded webinar, we're going to have the chat there, but we'd like you to attend so that as live questions come in you can answer them.
You can bamboozle them thinking that you can speak and demonstrate and answer questions in the chat at the same time.
It was weird because they might have asked a question and in the original recording I might have said, yeah, I'll cover that later.
Yeah.
I can see exactly what Paul and Anthony are saying.
No, I do agree with that. It is slightly weird. It is weird. Now, Kim's saying she thinks the flipped classroom would work well if she understood what she was supposed to learn. If you didn't, then you'd be lost. The idea is, if you start off, I mean, done correctly, you start off, so say you've got like a 10-part series of something. So you go into the first session and then they'll give you like an orientation into the whole 10 sessions. There should be a timetable so you know what's going to be covered in session 2, 3, right through to 10. But there'd also be your homework in inverted commas, but actually it's pre-work. Homework implies applying what you've learnt. Whereas what's supposed to be happening here is that you are told, read this chapter, watch this video, and answer these questions. And then come in for the lecture, which would be session 2. But session 2 is then actually your opportunity to get complete clarity on any areas that you may not have understood. So it can work brilliantly. I'll give you an example of a standard classroom where it did not work for me at all. I was pretty good at maths, but I was pretty good at maths in a weird way. I could just look at like a formula. Well, do you have a program called Countdown in the States? Basically, they pick 6 numbers. And then, so there's 4 big numbers they can choose, 100, 75, 50 and 25, and then a lot of little numbers. And the contestant picks whatever series of numbers they want to get to 6. So either one big one and 5 small ones or whatever. Well, I avidly watch that for years and years. When the numbers come up, you see the 6 numbers at the top, and then another number is generated, and you have to use the 6 numbers, adding, multiplying, dividing, however, to make this 7th number that they've picked. So say you've got a 50 and a 10, and the answer's 1,000. 500. The answer's 500. Right, then you multiply 50 by 10 and you're there. Obviously, they get much more complicated than that. But I would say Mike's given up playing with me. Haven't you, dear? You won't do Countdown with me, will you? I've lost him. He's reading.
No, I'm reading about Countdown, the American game show, an American adaptation of the British game show Countdown, also so called there. Countdown, was planned to be aired on the US television beginning in September 1990, but it never made it onto the air.
Oh, in that case, you won't know. Well, basically, that's what you do. But Mike will no longer play a game of Countdown with me, I'm afraid. No, because the numbers come up and I look at the first 6 numbers. And as soon as the numbers come up in my head, I'm thinking 10, 8. So the first number's 10, second number's 8. Okay, 8 from 10 is 2. 10 plus 8 is 18. And as they're putting up the next one, 7, I'm thinking 10 minus 7. So in my head, before they've even got all 6 numbers up, I'm like pre-processing it. When they then bring up the big number, they go back to the game show host who says, right, so this is today's numbers game. Let's get started. Then he presses a button. I would say a good 80% of the time, at the point he's pressed the button, I've already got the answer. The thing is, what I did not excel at school was showing my working out.
You've got to show
you. You've got to show you're working out. And I'm like, why? I know the answer. What's the problem? Because that's just the way I'm terrible with languages. I speak the odd word of French not very well. Let's say that. Language is complete mystery to me. But maths, no. I have a maths brain. So this one occasion, there was a bit of maths I didn't get. And it was all to do with binary. So we'd been doing binary in class, we'd been, you know, she gave us a bit of an overview of it. And we then did a couple of examples and I thought, fair enough. But I had a question. And this question would have aided my understanding. And we got our homework, so I did my homework. And I went in and I said, I've got a question. So you went up and you asked your question. And I said to her, why are we converting numbers into binary and then converting them back from binary into decimal? And she looked at me. So all I wanted to know was why. I didn't want to know how. I just wanted to know why. She looked at me like I was dirt on her shoe and said, don't be stupid. Go and sit down. So at no point was this ever explained to me. So it comes up to the exams and I'm saying to my mum, I hate binary. I don't understand binary. And obviously I could do binary conversion. I just didn't know why I was doing it. Why are we doing it? What's the point? And we're turning this apple into an orange and then we're turning the orange back into an apple. Why did we do that? I don't know. Years later, I passed my maths, but years later, I got a computer. And guess what? That's why we convert numbers to binary. If she'd have just explained that. Now, in a flipped classroom, what would have happened would have been the initial look at binary would have taken longer and it would have explained why. It would have shown you how. And then your homework would have been... Hang on. They would have told you what to read to understand it. And then any questions that you had, you would bring back to a full session, not 2 minutes going up into a queue and asking your question. The entire session would have been, so what questions did you have about that? What worked for you? What didn't work for you? It's a much more progressive way of doing it. I just was put off. I never asked another question. My mum said to me, I don't care if you show the working out or not. Because we'd be stood over here. We have a tax called VAT, value added tax. And over the years, it's been really weird amounts. It was 7.5% and 12.5% and then 17.5%. And we'd be stood in a store and she'd be looking at something. And I remember the day she stood there and said, can't quite remember which way around it was, what value it was at the time. But she looked at this price and she said, but then I need to add the VAT onto it. And I just glanced over and it was something weird, like, you know, £44.63. And I just totally told her what the VAT was. I said, the VAT's X and the total price is Y. And she went, thank you, and carried on. She didn't say, like, are you sure? Well, I know the answer to that. And it just, I find it slows me down to have to write it down. But I think I would have loved it if we'd have been told, go away and read this, watch this video, do that, and then this is your homework. When you come back, tell me what problems you've got. Tell me. So the teacher should be saying, tell me how I can clarify that for you. Instead of which, no, it was the old-fashioned way for me. Right, so Kim says she's got the same problem with math and showing her work. And you had to write each step. Yeah, when I first started programming,
takes us back to the cup of tea example.
Yeah, my teacher, it was the very first time I'd got my hands on a computer at school. And he said, right, we're going to write a program to make a cup of tea. And we're like, are we going to program it? And he said, no, I'm going to show you that programming is just understanding. It's a 7100, Mike. We discussed that when you weren't there. It's a 7100 analysing requirements is what it is. So he said, right, so how do you make a cup of tea? And we were like, you pour the water in the cup. No, no, no. He said, what water? Is there any water in the kettle? Oh, right. Okay. So, and he made us go through the entire process. It was agonizing. It took us about 55 minutes out of an hour lecture. And it was things like, you know, we'd say, turn the kettle on. And then the kettle would boil and he'd say, did you turn it on at the wall? Oh! You had to think of every single eventuality. And that's what I said last night when I was saying about these whippersnappers, you know, let's teach children to code. No, let's teach children to understand the principles of coding first. Then we'll teach children to code. Because otherwise, you know, they're coding it. I'll turn the kettle on. It's not plugged in. You know, that's why programs are so badly written these days, in my opinion. I think you did it with shoe tying. They always get us with something, don't they? And it's usually something so simple. Oh, we had all sorts of, we said, like, put the kettle under the tap. Right, it's full. He said, did you turn the tap on? Like, oh, literally every single thing we did, we'd missed something. But it taught me a lot. I mean, I still remember that now. And when I go in to do something, particularly something like in Notion, where I'm like, Notion is brilliant for rapid prototyping. Access, I don't believe is. I think with Access, you need to know what you're building to start with, because changing it later is going to be a living nightmare.
Yeah.
But Notion is fantastic at rapid prototyping. So I can create a database and worry about it later. But when I'm building it, I do use the rapid prototyping part of it, but I never just sit down and throw stuff together, because I've been trained to think it through. What are you trying to achieve with this? Is there a better way to achieve it? Why are you doing it this way? You question yourself to the point I even say, is Notion the place for this? We actually did that on Sunday, didn't we? With a job. We've got a job and it's in Notion. And Mike said to me, I've been thinking about it. He said, do you think it'd be better in a spreadsheet? And I said, you know, I was thinking the same. And what we then did was sit down and say, well, the benefit of having it in Notion is this, and the benefit of having it in a spreadsheet is that. Which one outweighs the other? And then at the end of the day, to archive it, I'd want it in Notion. Can I export the spreadsheet and bring it into Notion? And you're thinking through all the scenarios. And the Flip Classroom reminds me of that, that it lets you work through it first and then ask questions. You did the T one. The T one must be a classic. The thing was, I took this course twice. It was a 10-week or 12-week mini course on computing. And I did not want to do the dance one at all. So I managed to sweet talk myself onto it the second time. So this first week, he said, right, so I'm going to teach you about making a cup of tea. And he looked at me and he said, don't say one word. I said, I have no intention of saying one word. And it was so funny to watch everybody else make exactly the same mistakes. Maybe we should try flipping something, Mike, as an example.
Yeah.
We could try that and see how it worked. That'd be cool. I'm going to have a think about that. I'm going to have a think about it. But, you know, Mike, access has been mentioned twice. Again, can't escape it. Not forever. We'll have to think about. Now, we did at least find out it was from the beginning. So from the beginning last night, I did some chat. I'm sure you saw it.
I did.
And they wanted it from the beginning. So possibly that, but I mean, it's not a one session thing, is it?
No.
No, Mike can't do the whole of Access in 15 minutes.
Well, not when it used to take me 5 days.
No, my other one that I didn't tell them, my other one, not being a woman this time, this is just how training companies were. Went to a training company. They were looking for a physio trainer, right? And they were looking for a physio trainer because the physio trainer that they'd had let them down. So it was something like, this was Thursday and they wanted it the following Friday. So not the next day, but 5 working days away. Are you free? So I looked at my diary and as it happens, I was free. So I said, yes, I'm free. And the message came back, didn't it? If she's any good, why is she free? Why isn't she booked solid for 6 months? And that so annoys me. And that I sent back a message, didn't I? Because I'm so flaming expensive. But you need a physio trainer. No, but that's how they treat it. They need a trainer, but instead of looking on the positive side of, oh, great, we've got a trainer, they then start looking at it like, I like the blokes. Oh, God, it's a woman. Right. I mean, to be honest, they'd be the same if it was a group full of women and a bloke came in to teach them word processing. Because they're on a jolly thinking it's going to be a ladies' day out.
When I was... Well, it wasn't that long ago. It was when I was at System House. So it'll be...
That was over 20 years ago.
Early 90s, yeah. They took this lad on as a trainer. He'd never done training before, but he just fancied it.
Oh, I fancy being a pilot. Do you think they'd take me on?
In his previous... I mean, there's nothing wrong with swapping careers. You've done it.
Yeah.
He worked for Rent-A-Kill, which is
perfect for training. Yeah,
a pest control company, and I don't know what he did. I don't know whether he was a trainer there or whether he actually got his hands dirty and went down sewers and things. But I remember I used to give him a lift, and he turned around to me once. He says, "This is a woman's job, this."
Does it make a difference? Yeah. I cannot. I can honestly say I've never gone into as a trainee. So me going on a course.
Thank you, Kim.
And even given it a second thought as to what gender the trainer is. What difference does it make? But I do remember at one that I went to, you know, at the Bridgewater.
Yeah, I've trained word processing loads.
I went to two like conferences. One was at the Bridgewater and one was in Birmingham. And I went to this one at the Bridgewater And I think my mum came along to both, but she didn't come into the conference. We just booked in a hotel overnight and she had a night away from my father. Yeah,
just gonna say
she
that.
Loved it. So she'd like go shopping or be in a coffee shop all day. So I went into this conference and I must admit, I didn't notice until this guy held the door open and I looked and I thought, where's the women? And there was three of us. Now, that's not bad if there's 20 at this conference. There was 2,500. And literally, there were three ladies. And one of those was speaking. So one was from Microsoft. God knows how the other one got in. But these blokes were like, oh, it's a woman. Now, I know it was like 1998, but even so. But they were just like the looks they gave you. Like, oh, what are you doing here? You know. But what tickled me was, I found so funny, when it came to the break, I was in and out because there was nobody in the queue for the ladies. Nope. The guys. It was the only time in my life I've seen the queue for the gents three times around the building.
Now I remember that condescending guy.
Oh, which one?
Doing the draw.
Oh, that was hysterical. This is a classic. Right, I goes to a conference. And there weren't that many ladies, but there was nowhere near 50-50.
No.
It was probably about 90% men. But that one, my mum had actually come in. She did the marketing for my company way back then. So she'd come into this session. And what they did was at the end of each session, and the sessions were about 3 hours. So, and it had gone on for 2 days. At the end of each session, so lunchtime day one, end of day one, lunchtime day two, end of day two, there was a prize draw. And the prize draw was for some software. And I wanted this software. Now, each time there was a draw, it was for a different piece of software. But I didn't legitimately have any of this software at the time. So I was desperate to win this software. So the end of the first session came along and he said, right, we're going to do a prize draw. And you did it by putting your business card in. So obviously they then had your number. And he would pull one out. Every single session, so the first session comes along, he pulls it out, you know, Fred Smith, sorry, ladies, end of day one, we'll have another prize draw, pulls it out, Stan Smith, sorry, ladies, lunchtime, day two, pulls another one out, Peter Smith, sorry, ladies, well, by then I was seething. It was a condescending way he was doing it. So, we gets in the lift to go down and have some lunch, as all the presenters and entourage from this company get in the lift. And I'm stood behind this guy and I thought, I can't help it. And I was twitching and my mum knew I was twitching that I wouldn't leave it. I poked this guy in the back. I like tapped him on the shoulder and I went, if you say sorry, ladies, one more time, you'll be wearing your teeth the other end, right? And he went, okay. So that was that. I didn't think any more of it. End of the day came. We're having a prize draw. And my mum just looked at me and went, don't say anything. You know, you've said enough. I went, So it was like Hannibal Lecter meets a Rottweiler, wasn't it? So he comes round and he collects the business cards, puts all the business cards in. And he stood there right in front of us and he pulled out a card. And he went, congratulations, Elaine. And the thing was, because it was the last session of the entire thing, instead of winning one of these apps, you won the entire suite. Oh, I could not have been more made up. I think it was about $3,500 worth of software. But my mum said to me when we got outside, she said, I have no idea how he did that, but that was a fix. And I went, I totally agree with you, but I don't know how he did it either.
And you don't care.
And I don't really care. But that was his own fault, wasn't it? That was just, I mean, there was no need to say sorry, ladies. I don't know why they feel the need, but I think it's some blokes feel very inadequate around ladies. Maybe they felt we shouldn't have been there because it was a technical thing. But do you know, that stood me in good stead for years because the application, the company who made the software was Macromedia. Now, Macromedia used to make Fireworks, Dreamweaver, Flash. What else did they have? Freehand. It was an entire suite of products. So because I'd got it, when they got bought out by Adobe and I wanted to do a cross-grade upgrade, at least I had something to upgrade from. So I never paid the full price for that because I won the entire suite. I only ever had to pay the upgrade price. And then when I moved to a Mac, I got a crossgrade out of them. I was on the phone for about 3 days for that one, wasn't I? You want to upgrade? I said, yes. Right, here's how you... No, just a minute. I'm on Windows and I have the Windows software. And what I want is a crossgrade upgrade. 3 days later, but I did it. I got it in the end. The thing was, we saw his hand go in, but honest to God, it was a fix. It was a total fix. The look on his face said it all. And the look on our faces was like, yeah, could sort of see that coming. But he did. That's been fascinating talking about learning, hasn't it?
Yeah.
I think we should try to flip something and do a proper flipped learning and see how that goes. If you've got any ideas of something that's small enough that you'd like to do, so not like the whole of Access over 17 weeks. Something smallish, one or two parts, let me know. If you can't think of anything, then I'll think of something and we'll do a flipped classroom and you can see what that's all about. That's a jolly good idea, if I say so myself.
It is.
Right, so we can go back and finish that session that we had to record because we missed the end. Shall we go and do that?
We could do.
Have you got a better plan? Oh, big excitement for Mike tonight. Go on, share, babe.
I've got a delivery coming.
Oh, talk dirty to me. I've got a delivery coming.
Now, the problem is it's scheduled to be between 9 and 10. And I've got another delivery scheduled for tomorrow.
That's for all the stuff they don't get here today.
Yeah, but the problem is the cutoff is 10.
So if he doesn't get here till 5:00, you are so screwed.
Well, actually, the stuff should already... Well, it's out for delivery, so I should know if anything's missing. And tomorrow's a dog day. It's dog treats.
Don't tell Lola or she'll let him in.
Today's salad day.
Oh.
Tomorrow's dog day.
Oh, well, we'll see what salad we get. Did you order the lettuce?
Yes.
Oh, it's lettuce night.
Lettuce night. Instead of date night, it's lettuce night.
Well, hopefully Jonathan can catch up with this on demand later. I'll process it straight away. I've been getting very good at doing that, you know. Very, very good. Which actually was quite amazing. You won't know this, Mike. But on Saturday night, you know, because we did a pass-through from one show to another, when it came time to process the podcast for Marooned, the actual audio file was 6.5 hours long. So I had to make a derivative of the first bit. I thought, I can't have that. It was like 4 gigs, something like that.
I've done that because the way I've got Audio Hijack set up, or the way you've set Audio Hijack up for me.
Did you see the blame come my way?
No. I'm giving you the credit.
Oh, that, I'll carry on then.
Right.
I guess I spoke.
The way that Audio Hijack is set up on my machine is that... when I do webinars and I have to press record, and what I normally do is press stop when I've finished delivering the webinar, but sometimes I forget to press stop and I'll go into Finder and I'll think, I've lost a load of disk space here. So I'll then go into my Audio Hijack folder and I'll see there's like 20 files of 2 gig each because it's pre-set to chop it up into 2 gig bits.
When he says he forgot to press stop, he doesn't mean for like 10 minutes.
No, I mean for like 24 hours.
He means like 3 days. It's all right, I've done that myself. Yeah. You do, you just forget.
Yeah.
Particularly with something like ScreenFlow because it's so low maintenance, you forget it's recording.
You've done that before.
I've recorded for 72 hours before and totally forgotten. I mean, it does make you wonder, how did you do that? Because if you press record, you must have been recording something for a reason. But I record things like, you know, when you submit your taxes and the VAT stuff.
Yeah.
I record it, but if I forget to press stop, it can be like, it's massive. No, I'm very bad.
Right, well, I'll go and open the door.
You go and open the door. I'll say goodbye to everybody. We'll be back with you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Tomorrow night, we've got to get ready for Thursday night because it's Captain Tom's birthday. So we need something in the garden with happy birthday on it. So we'll have to sort that out.
Yeah.
And your homework for the night is to work out something you'd like to see in a flipped classroom. Now you are aware what a flipped classroom is. But it's good night from me.
It's good night from me.
And we will both see you next time. Keep safe, guys.